Good Friday, comrade.
Good morning, everybody.
You know, I'm kind of discouraged this morning.
Oh, no.
Because it's episode 222, but we're on part three. If Wednesday had been
222,
part two, that would have been like some glorious symmetry, the likes of which the world has never seen before.
Yeah.
It would have been the harmonic resonance and the dawning of the age of Aquarius. But now we're just, that could have solved all the pandemics and fascisms.
Everything. But on the other hand, it is Fascism Friday and Friday the 13th. So that's pretty cool.
But that's the evil twin of what they could have been.
Yeah.
What's the opposite of the age of Aquarius? The age of it's the ending of the age of Capricorn. I don't know. Right. I don't know. I think Capricorn.
Yeah, let's rip on Capricorns.
Right. I'm a Capricorn.
Kathleen and CK are greeting us in very robust
good
ways.
Good freaking fascist Friday and good morning and fuck them fascist.
There we go. Woohoo! I like that energy. You guys are bringing it today.
CK always brings the fucks. He has fucks to give.
He has fucks to give.
Oh my gosh. There's so many things we can.
Should we introduce ourselves first before you end
my
up in
brain
an apoplectic state?
Sure. I'm Ash Van Steenwyck. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
There's the accent.
Yes.
The fake British.
No,
Swedish,
that was a universal
Finnish
accent.
Accent.
It's the Esperanto of accents.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct Mike at the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing.
Ellen says apparently Friday the 13th has a whole feminine. I want to know this. Lord.
Yeah. See,
give us wisdom,
you know that,
please.
And that would not surprise me at all, right? That it's actually a positive feminine thing that's been turned into something.
Yeah. Misogyny evil. Fucks up all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And then Victoria, partner to CK, says, yeah, he does.
Yeah, he does. That's sort of bordering on TMI right there. You two get a room.
Yeah, I don't want to. put a cap on that. So it's Fascism Friday, this great and glorious tradition of engaging the theme of the week through the lens of, hey, how can this be used to oppress people? And you know, Dan and I, as is our custom, usually have a conversation beforehand, and it was wide ranging. So there's, that's not what I meant, rats. Sideways cry laughter emoji. Okay. Fascism lives off of uncertainty, and so we can talk about all kinds of things. And there's two examples that, you know, Dan has brought my attention to. He sends me texts sometimes about, hey, Mark, or Ash, sorry, I just deadnamed myself, check out this fucked up thing. Like, it's kind of, it's how we show love. But one of them is, and I'm going to bring these both up and then let Dan rip on them, because Dan usually thinks a lot about these things that he sends. The first is this. Apparently in Mississippi, because of COVID denialism, there's just too many people in the hospitals, and so they're turning this shitty parking garage into an overflow medical, you know, facility.
Right.
So that is the most depressing work environment for a doctor that I can imagine, besides like a cave or something. I don't know. That's pretty shitty.
Yeah.
The other one, I can't pull up, but apparently the esteemed Josh Hawley, who's one of these, I mean, the only person I can think of who is a lawmaker in this country that's worse is maybe Marjorie Greene.
Yeah.
But he introduced a bill to bring 100,000 new cops, to fund 100,000 new cops. And Biden is like, yay, I endorse that.
Great idea.
Yeah. Both of these are examples of the weaponization of uncertainty in ways that unleash oppression upon the world.
So are you going to keep us in mini-me mode here?
I kind of like small head version of us because we can have big heads.
There we go. Yeah, so, you know, one of the things, and by the way, when I first saw that tweet about the Mississippi Basement Clinic, I thought, okay, this is fake, right? But it's not fake. It's not fake. And in fact, we have two very good friends who are young doctors who sadly have ended up in Mississippi. And they work. This is at the University Hospital. So they work where this garage clinic has been set up, and it's up and running. I just talked to my friend Seth this morning. It's up and running and rapidly filling up. So, you know, think about the look if you're a nurse or a doctor and you show up in the garage, right? I mean, I think, like, how do you keep that clean, right? You know, think about a concrete garage, right? But
cement dust.
Yeah, cement dust, you know.
Like falling into open, like, wounds and stuff. And it's cold, and they're also damp, and, like, all, yeah, the humidity is going to be there. And, like, I can't imagine a worse place to be, right, all, like, dying than a hot
in the summer.
Yeah. Like, it's not like those things are overabundant with air conditioning.
Oh, my God. I mean, and But what I realized in sort of thinking about this, and, you know, and you look at, right, so Hawley and 100,000 cops, which seems to be this magic number, right? I mean, didn't Clinton do that, 100,000 cops, you know, and you look at the opioid epidemic, which is also just getting worse and worse, you know, this reality that for the first time and whenever, you know, white life expectancy is going down. What I realize is that there is this entire group of white folks who would rather die than do something different, right? And, you know, and the census data just came out, right, which is everything that we know and expected, which is that, you know, America is getting less white. And so here are these people in a place like Mississippi, and of course happening in Arkansas, Louisiana, all these places. And basically the message is, yeah, we would rather either go down with the ship or create this fascist state where we kill a lot of other people, then imagine something different. And I think that in many ways, that is always sort of the core of the fascist impulse, like the uncertainty of the future and our own projections of our own fears and hatreds and terrors, like, are so much more terrifying than even death, that I would rather choose death. Like, I'd rather die in a fucking parking garage in the basement of the hospital than consider an egalitarian, multi-ethnic, multicultural society, which is so terrifyingly sad, right, when you think about it.
Well, just to some people, a loss of the sense of who they are, their kind of constructed identity, is more important to them than their physical life. I mean, this is kind of, at its best, that's kind of Christianity tries to get at that in a good way. Like, look, your physical death is not the worst thing that can happen to you. Choose love, you know, embrace the gospel, even if it's at the expense of your own life. Like, there's a good version of this. And there's a horribly toxic version of this, where it's like the myths that I believe about myself, even if they're destroying the world, like, I'm not going to give them up because that's all I've got. And I feel like there's, you know, that's what fascism is really at its root about, this sort of this mythic ideal of how life is supposed to be that is clearly not working. Look around, it's not working. But you can't acknowledge that. Otherwise, everything you know about yourself has to be reexamined. And that's a sort of soul death to people. And they'd rather like die heroically fighting for what they believe to be true. And that's what fascism does. And speaking of which, here's a great, you can always, sometimes Dan and I are too positive. And we need CK to bring us down. CK writes, I'm going to go ahead and predict because of capitalism, fascism, this is the last 100 years of humanity.
Well, I mean, it's certainly a possibility. It's certainly a possibility. Although, you know, what I would say is that I think that statistically, what would be much more likely is sort of a massive collapse with a very high percentage of die-off and then some kind of, you know, reorganization with a much smaller population. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I think that we really are at a point where, yeah, I mean, we're biological creatures and biological creatures become extinct. Mm-hmm. Happens all the time. We could be facing extinction, which, you know, is a very difficult thing to contemplate. You know, especially those of us that have kids or grandkids or, you know, think about other people or whatever.
And it's frustrating. And like, and I get this, like sometimes this is can be a helpful metaphor, but a lot of people be like, probably a good thing. Fucking humanity. I'm like, this isn't humanity's fault in the sense that we all bear equal responsibility. Mm-hmm. Most people get fucked over disproportionately by those who are doing the fucking over. So again, this is, you know, the idea that fascism creates, like, white people create problems, and then fascism is trying to blame other people for the problems that white people created. So I told the story beforehand about one time my brother and I were sharing a bed. I was 8 and I wet the bed, and I tried to, when he woke up, I was like, oh, you wet the bed. I blamed him for it. And I got so into it, even though I knew I was the one who did it, that I started getting angry at him. And that's what, that's going to be my operative metaphor for fascism now for the rest of my life, mm-hmm. is the time I wet the bed and blame my brother for it. And so we see this sort of cosmic need to not feel responsible for the horrible things. And so what fascism does is it shifts the blame. And it's so compelling to so many people because the alternative is like repentance.
Right. Now Stefan brings up a good point here. Yeah. We should get to this.
I think you give them too much credit for thinking about consequences, especially in a realistic way. If they really believed they could die, they would avoid it. Yeah, I think most of this is not conscious.
Right, it's not conscious, and it's absolutely true that you know, that the running of habit and habitual pattern is what dominates a lot of this, and that's very important. And of course, one of the things that we do see, right, with the pandemic is a good example, is, you know, a number of these people that do get sick. Mm-hmm. Have friends or relatives get sick, have friends or relatives die, even, you know, their last dying words, right, is like, I wish I'd gotten the vaccine, you know, and so, right, so when that veil of lack of awareness finally gets penetrated somehow, there is a small amount of wakening up. And though, you know, Ash, as you're just pointing out, I mean, there is a small group of people that is sort of in charge of this, or is the, you know, are the lead proponents. Mm-hmm. And they actually are much more aware of what's going on.
Exxon is a great example of, yeah. They've known for decades the consequences of, yeah. fossil fuel extraction, yeah. but they make too much money to not do it.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, for, for those folks, there is this kind of weird, it's almost like this game of chicken, right? It's like, well, can I keep making money and profiting from this before I die? You know, will we go over the cliff before or after I die? And if it's after I die, then I'm just going to keep doing it. And, you know, because I'm benefiting. But of course, now we're at the point where the cliff is a lot closer. So it's, you know, for those of us that are engaged or committed to the spiritual life, I think that, to me, kind of framing this and crystallizing this in this particular way is so helpful, because it really does make me be aware of the fact that yeah, I need to lean into that unknown. Mm-hmm. Right? I need to lean into that unknown, because otherwise, you know, the fear and the habit and all of these negative projections, that just trends towards death.
Yeah.
And the unknown, seemingly as abyss-like as that may feel, that's the only thing that's going to lean towards life in a lot of these cases.
Yeah, and even going back to this Exxon example that I threw out, like, I still would imagine that these CEO types for these oil companies aren't at the full level of consciousness where they'd say, I know this is bringing death and will only ever bring death, and progress cannot save us from this, but I will do it anyway. I think they still believe in these myths enough, like, well, innovation is great. It's what separates us from the animals, and we'll fix it somehow. So let's just keep it spinning. Like, I think that's generally they're still delusion. They still know not what they do. And it's, you know, Hannah Arendt, it's been a while since I brought her up, like at least a month. So I got to bring her up again. This idea of cliched thought being kind of the driving engine of oppression. It happens all the way up. Kind of not having this humility, and this is, again, you know, Dan brings up humility as a key cornerstone of the spiritual life. This sort of humility saying, I don't know where this will go, so maybe I should interrogate this, is really, at some level, the only thing that's going to save us. Mm-hmm. And we have to nurture that and embrace that as a good thing, not this painful thing that we sometimes are forced to do, but say, like, how can I live my life with a sort of gracious curiosity and an openness to the possibility that I'm wrong and I could, that there's a better way. Like, how do I nurture that? And our churches sure as hell don't nurture that. I mean, that's the whole spiritual community. This is supposed to be where this is at. And I really believe that if the church was operating on all of its cylinders, we could save the world. Mm-hmm. But we're not. We're driving the engine of fascism. So all this stuff we talk about, it all interconnects like a sad web. Comments coming in.
Yeah,
CK, more sunshine. One, 2-3 degree temperature difference is going to kill off millions. It sure is. Yeah. It's already. We're already seeing a lot of that. Gus writes, it feels like a 12 monkeys kind of scenario. Fear of uncertain, scary future causes some folks to act in a way that twist ending is the thing that causes the bad shit inadvertently. I haven't seen that movie, you fucker. Now I know the twist ending. CK writes, I'm just kidding. I'm not upset. I'm one of those people who read the last page of books sometimes when I start. CK writes, I have known a few people who have died and been brought back, and knowing that they have a second chance at life hasn't changed anything in life.
Yeah, I mean, that's fascinating, right? And, this is another thing that's really amazing about these times to me. And actually, Gregory and I have talked about this a number of times, is that, you're almost seeing some of these biblical stories happen in real time, right? And what you're talking about, CK, is it's like that story of, you know, Abraham and the guy that's the bad guy that dies. And he's like, you know, please go back and tell my brothers, like, if somebody comes back, you know, and And they're like, they're not going to listen. Like, they've got all these spiritual teachings and they're not going to listen. They're not going to change. And, you know, and it's true, right? You see the stuff going on, and, you know, yours is the most extreme example. And it's like, yeah, the ignorance is very, very difficult. And I don't mean that in an information kind of way, but more in a spiritual level kind of way. It's very, very hard to penetrate. Yeah, that's Don's story, got a comment that, go ahead.
Yeah, and that's the story of the rich man Lazarus, and Lazarus at Abraham's bosom, which we don't use the word bosom enough anymore. But yeah, it's like, and this is really important to just stop and think about, like, and underscore what you just said. Like, you know, the takeaway is like, look, I've already sent all the prophets, and they didn't listen to that. Right. If I send you back or whatever, it's not going to change anything. And the thing is, all the information we need for thriving is here. Yeah. So this idea that somehow progress will lead us to a place where we can break free and have triumph, it's like, look, we have all the information we need to thrive now. So, like, somehow having, like, a cold fusion generator is going to save us? There's other ways to fuck ourselves up. Like, it's not going to save us. We have what we need now to be saved.
Yeah.
So listen to the prophets. Here's Don's comment. It's always good. The early Christian movement was characterized by the creation of multi-ethnic and multi-status communities. This was not and is not a goal not sought after by white mainstream churches who have never challenged racial and economic segregation. H.R. Niebuhr makes it tough to be anti-fascist.
Right. Yeah, and Don, this is exactly right on. And, you know, Ash, this is what you were getting at there, that, you know, the church communities could and ideally should, in terms of their own mission statement, be a place that is living out these different ways of existing.
And some do. Like, people always get upset when I just make blanket statements, but of course there are spiritual communities across the board that live into this, but they're
very, very few and far between. And the imperial Christian movement is simply designed to prop up the empire. So it's very hard to find these places. And this kind of gets to Cheryl's comment here, this next comment.
Yeah, this is a big one. Mentioning kids and grandkids. How do we talk to them about this all? Or do we try to pretend all is wonderful? What I wrestle with, balance, I would imagine, is still troublesome. Yeah. That's a great question. I think a lot of kids at a certain age, like my son is 13, and he's too smart for his own good sometimes. But he knows things are crappy. Yeah. I think a lot of kids do know, and it's hard to talk about this with him because I have no idea what I could say that would be encouraging.
Well, I mean, so first of all, I'm not into the pretending that all is wonderful because, especially with a cell phone in hand, kids know that that's not the case. So pretending is a lot harder these days. But to me, this is where this push towards spiritual community, spiritual life, living differently right now, I think is so powerful and so important. And I think I work with, engage, have relationships with lots and lots of young people. And, you know, they respond very well to older people, elders, who are willing to be honest and who are willing to sit with them, ask the tough questions, help teach them and practice with them new and different practices. And I think that that's the best we can do. That's all that we can do. And people are really hungry for that. I mean, people are really hungry for that. That is hopeful and positive. To admit how screwed up things are, and actually to acknowledge the crazy context that they are growing up in, is more, way more helpful than denying it. And is actually a great relief, because many of the people around them, and certainly a lot of the systems around them, want to pretend that everything is fine and not going on, which is really crazy making when it's clearly not the case.
Yeah. CK writes, on a positive note, I had a shitty life and was given a second chance and found love, purpose, and meaning in life with Victoria.
Yeah.
Now, that's, you know, we give you crap, but it's the crap we give ourselves. Like, it's easy to kind of look at this negative stuff, but you're right. Like, what you're bringing up is kind of very important. Like, so you've created this sort of life-giving nest. And to me, that's where hope is found. And like, okay, because, you know, we haven't hung out that much, but, you know, y'all came to my karaoke party in my backyard. And it's clear there's life being generated from this little community of yours, your family.
Yeah.
And that's really where, that's where the bread and butter is. Like, yes, we need to build movements and organize, but in order, the generator for that, there are communities of truthfulness, love, and compassion, and not in the kind of like, you know, like hippie kind of way, but like provocative, destructive love that's willing to throw down. Like, and that's, we really have to get serious about this. Like, we beat this drum all the time. I'm not just trying to be some sort of armchair critic about churches. I think we really, really, really need to get down to it as churches and families and households, saying like, look, the days are evil. How do we create spaces of truth-telling and discernment and compassion and put and reorder our economic lives and get serious about this revolutionary life stuff? Like, it's not going to come from somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, and this is one of the reasons why, you know, we're so excited about this spiritual direction program that we're doing, and why I think there's been so much response to this and positive response to this, is that, you know, the applying the tools of the spiritual life to social transformation is a yearning that is coming up in more and more people, right? And this is one of the things I talk about in my book, Creation's Wisdom, right? That cure and problem often arise at the same time within ecosystems. And that's true for physical ecosystems, social ecosystems. And the rise in interest in contemplation of the spiritual life over the last 50 years is correlating perfectly with the rise of many of these problems. And I think that's not a coincidence at all. And the desire for people all over the world to say, all right, how do we begin to listen to the spirit of love and engagement within this shitstorm that is happening to us? I think people recognize that's the only really viable activity particularly powerless individuals have, and that paradoxically, that creates a lot of power.
Right. Patricia has a comment towards that, but first, Gus writes, yeah. You're right, shouldn't give spoilers to a movie that's only 26 years old. So
I think that's a slightly sarcastic comment. Right?
I can't tell, and I'm not able to tell if things are sarcastic. You know what, though? Like, I haven't seen the movie, but I've read the Wikipedia article about it because it's referenced enough. I knew about the twist, but I wanted to give you shit because I get joy from that. Patricia writes, do you see a split between Christian activism and contemplative Christianity? Yeah. The contemplative activist is a trend we could cultivate, but it does disrupt the goal of inner peace. Yeah, and I mean, that's what Dan was just talking about. Like,
yeah.
Part of the thing is contemplation and action are supposed to go together, and they generally don't. The way that we're, like, at least programmatically, and people act like somehow it's just contemplation is a foregone conclusion, it'll spill over into radical action. And so it's because of these bad habits of the Western mind.
And yeah, I was going to say, it would, it would disrupt the white bourgeois goal of inner peace. I don't think it does disrupt the real goal of inner peace. But often the way that spirituality is portrayed in America, it disrupts the goal of inner peace for sure. Mm-hmm.
Webb writes, my reluctant prediction is that white supremacist Christians will definitely go head over heels into fascism, just as they've gone head over heels for Donald Trump. The psychology is like this. I'm a believer. I have faith. Therefore, I have no fear. What am I going to do with my repressed fear? Turn it into scapegoating rage against those others.
Exactly. That's accurate. The process of that kind of toxic projection. And it's not good.
See, curious. You almost have to have a Sarah Connor way of parenting, preparing for this dystopic future. Another parenting coming here.
There you go.
That's a Terminator reference for folks who aren't in the know.
Terminator 2.
Great film. Stefan writes, be honest with kids about problems, but give them mental health tools to be emotionally okay with the facts and the need to do something about it socially. I started teaching my toddlers relaxation and meditation at 2 years old. That's great. Yeah. And like, you know, this has already been alluded to. Dan was explicit about this. Other comments have pointed towards this. But as a child who had trauma, one of the hardest things for me mentally was the fact that I was aware that things were wrong, but everyone was acting as though it wasn't. It would have helped me if people could have been honest about what was messed up. And so part of my own healing journey has been, there's a reason I talk about grim things all the time. It's because I'm a truth teller. It's important. In some ways, my adulthood is me speaking truth to my six-year-old self, saying, like, look, what you're noticing is true, and gaslighting drives me bonkers.
Yeah.
And we have a gaslit civilization right now.
And Stefan, this is a great comment. And I talk about this all the time in terms of mental hygiene, right? So, you know, we teach our kids physical hygiene, right? We teach them to brush their teeth and shower and, you know, wash their hair, and we talk about clean clothes, but we don't teach mental hygiene, right? We don't teach people from an early age how to relate to their own minds. And that, you know, creates so many of the problems that, you know, Ash, you just talked about and we've alluded to. And we need to teach mental hygiene. And when we do that, we are also teaching resiliency, right? And we're also teaching fearlessness. And we're also teaching all of these spiritual attributes that really help us to engage whatever's coming down the pike.
Well, you know, this is where I think it's important. There have been communities that have been living in apocalypse for 100 years. And so Indigenous children, Black children, Latinx children, many of them have grown up in communities under threat. And so there has to be truth telling. And so white people, the first time a lot of us, not exclusively, there's poor white people have to deal with shit. You know, like, anyways, I don't want to get too generalizing, but generally speaking, white people haven't had to deal with crisis mode much. And so we freak out and act weird, fucking white people. And this is why we don't give our attention to historically oppressed groups and marginalized groups because we're being nice and condescending. It's because they actually have wisdom and we need to pay attention or we're fucked. So this idea of giving our attention and creating space and diverse boards and things like that isn't because so we can be like good white people. We need this shit or we're gonna die. And some of us are waking up like, oh my God, things are getting shitty. There's communities of wisdom have been shitty for a long time. We need to pay attention and get over ourselves. And this isn't like I'm going to do a book club and figure out the right way to behave. This is, we are dying of thirst and they have water. Okay. So like, this is bizarre to me how white people talk. We talk about this stuff. This is needful. Like this is a time to be desperate and pathetic and awkward about it and get over ourselves real quick. Ellen writes, imagine if Greta Thunberg was sitting here in our church roundtable visioning meeting, what would she and the Holy Spirit bring together in our midst? It's a great discernment question.
Yeah.
or Huey Newton. There's a lot of great examples of radical truth tellers that'd be a fun imaginative process just to go through at every board meeting. Gene writes, accountability, knowledge is power. Stacy gives us high five, high 10, I should say.
High 10. Yes. Goalpost, thank you.
Yep. CK, yes, yes, yes. Ash, truth to our young self.
Yep.
Webb writes, I used to say depression happens when you're not allowed to know what you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's a deep one right there and a great ending point.
That's a good way to end. Yeah.
Depression happens when you're not allowed to know what you know.
Yeah. So know what you know. We need to know what we know.
For sure.
So next week, we're actually not going to be here. We're going to be off next week.
Sorry, everybody.
I'm sorry about that. But we will be back the week after, and then we'll be zooming into fall in September. And, yeah. And the next time we're back, so starting on the 23rd, we're going to do a little foreign policy week.
Yay!
We haven't done that in a while because things are going so well in Afghanistan.
Yeah. And Dan, you're doing some mental hygiene next week, right?
I'm doing some mental hygiene. I'm doing some kayaking on Lake Superior.
So. I have a friend who is backpacking for like at least a week around Isle Royale. And now you're going kayaking. And so I'm like, I'm feeling the need to tree it up. So
tree it up.
I need to get away. These days are the perfect days to go into the wilderness for a while and just appreciate what we're losing, just to put a negative spin on it.
All right.
We'll see y'all in a couple weeks.
Bye.
Bye.